Big pep, pep, pep. Hey, you're listening to Star Wars Splash Page Comics and Review, and I'm Matt, and that was not Jeff, but this is episode number 291, wherein we have love for the prequel trilogies, and legends are, in fact, truth. So, like I said, Jeff is unable to join us this week. He just got back from Star Wars Celebration, where he had a massive grand old good time, sent lots of photographs, posted lots of photographs. The hat made its appearance in Anaheim. And congratulations, one of our listeners, you know who you are, found the hat and uttered the code and won 3 volumes of Marvel Star Wars Volume 1 from 77 to 86. All 3 omnibus editions, collecting the entire run, with unfortunately the exception of issue number 108, because that came out long after those omnibus editions were published. Big day today for comics, that's for sure. We've got Bounty Hunters number 23, and we've got Darth Vader number 23. But before we start, how about the news? Well, as I said, Star Wars Celebration has just concluded. And we did get some comic announcements. Not a great deal on the Marvel front, but we got some, some stuff, especially when it comes to the next phase of the High Republic. And, of course, we had some great reveals from Dark Horse Comics, particularly, for example, cover number 2 for Star Wars Hyperspace Stories, as well as a little more detail on the hardcover graphic novel Tales from the Rancor Pit. High Republic-wise, we, of course, got a cover reveal for the Kevin Scott-written, Ario Anandito-illustrated second volume from Marvel. We got a great cover reveal for the 4-issue miniseries that Charles Soule is writing, and Marco Castillo is illustrating. That's Jeff texting, by the way, to make sure he's making sure I'm recording. But of course, that is a 4-issue miniseries, The Blade. And, of course, that focuses on Star Wars, the High Republic fan favorite, Porter Ingle, whom we know as a Jedi cook, but he wasn't always a Jedi cook. So that's going to be kind of intriguing as well. Out of the Marvel panel, we got just 2 real new nuggets of news. The big one being is that we are going to get a 10-issue maxi series. Looks like it's going to start in October as well, called Star Wars Yoda. And it's going to be written by Kevin Scott, Jody Hauser, and Mark Guggenheim, with art by Nico Leon, Luke Ross, and Alessandro Miraglio. This is a great little setup because essentially it's going to focus on, it's going to have 3 stories throughout this 10-issue run, and it's going to be focused on Yoda himself. And, of course, the series opens with Yoda on Dagobah just prior to Luke's arrival during The Empire Strikes Back. And it's going to kind of look back on his past, and the first arc will start in the High Republic era. So, well, going to be pretty intriguing. But you can find more details on that on the Facebook page. We've got a link to the interview with Kevin Scott that Kristen Baber did for Star Wars. One thing that I myself was a little bit disappointed about when it came to Star Wars Celebration and comics is we didn't get any real news about the Hidden Empire miniseries, which is the third part of the Soul trilogy. Of course, Bounty Hunters being, War of the Bounty Hunters being the first, Crimson Rain being the second. And there was almost no mention of the work that Claudia Gray is doing for Dark Horse Comics, when it comes to the High Republic. And then we didn't get any sneak peeks at the work that Daniel Jose Older is doing for Dark Horse either. So, but, we've got San Diego Comic-Con coming up. We've already had our solicits for August. So we're looking, now we'll look towards September and then ultimately October. So within a month or two, we should probably have a very good detailed look at what's going to be coming down for all of that. So, anyway, fingers crossed, and we'll see. And that's about it for news. Now, the comics out today. Woo! Darth Vader number 23 and Bounty Hunters number 23. Both of these are shockingly good in that they delve into some characters and events that we had seen in the movies, particularly The Phantom Menace. And then, of course, the Bounty Hunter story is singularly focused on Dengar, and wherein we also find out that that wonderful story about him in that that collection of stories about bounty hunters, Tales from the Bounty Hunters, where he got into some problems with Han Solo doing some swoop races on Corellia. Well, that's all canon now. That has now been brought out of Legends and placed firmly into the firmament of lore. But first and foremost, let's do a brief recap of Darth Vader number 23. I don't want to spoil it too heavily, because I think that this is a very intriguing and, more importantly, a critically important issue. But so Vader number 23, written by Greg Pak, art, as always, by Rafael Ayenko, colors are by Carlos Lopez, letters are by Virtual Calligraphy's Joe Caramagna. Paul Renaud is the main cover artist. We've also got variants by Takashi Okazaki and Rico Renzi. The Chris Sprouse Carl story and Niraj Menon Lucasfilm 50th anniversary variant cover as well. Assistant editor, that's Mikey J. Basso. Associate editor, congratulations on the promotion, is Danny Kazem. And the editor is Mark Panizia. C.B. Cebulski is, of course, the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics. For Lucasfilm, we've got senior editor Robert Simpson, creative director Michael Siglain, art director Troy Alders. From the story group at Lucasfilm, we've got Pablo Hidalgo, Matt Martin, and Emily Shkukani. And, of course, we have creative art manager Phil Shostak, who, surprisingly and shockingly, was not able to connect with Broaxium, with Chris and Dan, who were at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim. So perhaps we can rectify that at Star Wars Celebration London next year in April. But let's dive into this issue. Like I said, this is going to be a little different than what we normally do because we're not going to get too in-depth and we're not going to go page by page. But essentially, when last we were reading Darth Vader at the end of issue number 22, Sabe looked at Vader and basically said, "You're Anakin. I know this." And Vader was, "What?" And, of course, we open this issue up with him saying, "Well, Anakin Skywalker is dead." Well, of course, you know, to Darth Vader, Anakin is dead, even though Anakin is very much alive, as we discover. And, of course, Sabe drops some real knowledge and some real bona fides here. You know, "I was Padme's greatest shadow. I know what she knew. You can't fool me. Anakin vanished, and you appeared." Padme said Anakin spoke of order. We get a nice little flashback to Attack of the Clones, where Anakin and Padme are in the field having their picnic, you know. You know, the trouble is people don't always agree. And then Sabe goes on to say, "You're obsessed with it." "Anakin loved Padme. You nearly ripped open her grave to find out how she died. And despite all the chances you've had, you haven't killed me. I've been to Polis Massa. I heard her last words. There's good in him. I know, there's still..." And of course, Vader at this point ignites his blade. "What do you want?" And Sabe just says very plainly, "If you truly want order, I want to help." And then she opens up her little portable holo communicator device, flicks it open, and it's a picture of Shmi. And she explains to Darth Vader, "Anakin Skywalker's mother, Shmi, lived her life in slavery on Tatooine. He swore to free her, but he never did." And we get a little cut back to The Phantom Menace with Anakin leaving and his mother standing in the background. "That haunted Padme," Sabe continues, "and it haunted me. So I returned to Tatooine with the Royal Guard Tonra. In Shmi's honor, we worked in secret, freeing hundreds of enslaved people and smuggling them off-world. But now a colony of those free people is in danger. A corrupt governor, using the services of Crimson Dawn, is consolidating her power and neglecting her people. If you help me save those refugees, you'll get the chance to stomp out another cell of Crimson Dawners. And I'll get the chance to prove that Padme was right about you." And the bottom panel features only Vader's fist gripping his lightsaber, which is still ignited. And then we turn the page, and he goes, and he shuts it off. And with his head bowed, which is very unusual for Darth Vader, he simply utters, "So be it. You've chosen your path now. you alone are responsible for where it takes you. And then Sabe and Vader sort of stare at each other. And then she turns around and enters the shuttle, and Vader follows. And it takes off, and then, of course, the rest of the crew, including Ochi, "Lord Vader, wait!" And, of course, Valance, "Ha! Looks like you're not the favorite anymore, Ochi of Bastoon. Criff it all. Well, what does this mean, Valance? Are we still in Vader's service?" say the other bounty hunters. "You don't leave Vader's service until he releases you or kills you. You should feel lucky we dodged option two. So what do we do now?" And then, of course, Valance says, "I'll send for an evac. We'll go back to the Executor, take a shower, eat a big meal, and wait for the next mission." Ochi's not having any of this, though. He's jumping onto the TIE fighter and into it to take off. And Tonka goes, "Ochi, what are you doing?" "You losers, rest, Tanka. I'm getting back on the job." And he flies away in his TIE fighter. Before that handmaiden sets us all up for destruction. And then we cut to the shuttle with Vader and Sabe on board. And they're approaching Gabrador 3. And in the foreground is the governor's flagship. And Sabe said, "If she's on board, we can end this in one blow." And Vader asks, "Have they detected us?" "Not yet, Lord Vader. Take us to the surface." Sabe adds, "Well, wait, if you just summon your own Star Destroyer..." "No, I thought you came to..." "First, we will visit the colony and see if you have told the truth." So the shuttle lands, and it's a nice, cute, little, neat colony. Very, very, very charming. And then all of a sudden we get... This is where you're going to get your big blast from the past. So if you're a prequel trilogy lover, this is why you need to be out at your comic book shop later today or tomorrow and picking this up. "Kitster Benai, what are you doing with those weapons?" "Taking a stand, old man. We're not giving the governor any more workers. He'll kill you. He'll kill us all." Although I thought the governor was a woman, according to Sabe. And then following up, right behind Kitster, we hear the words, "It's all right, Kitster," spoken in Huttese. "Look," and the shuttle lands, and it's walled from the Phantom Menace, who sees, "It's Sabe." And of course, Kitster is, "Sabe? What are you doing in an Imperial shuttle?" And Wald asks, "And who is that?" as Vader steps down behind her. And then, of course, the erstwhile droid walks down and introduces everybody. And Sabe says, "It's about help, Kitster, if you're willing to accept it." And Wald says, "Well, our protocol droid broke down a few years ago, and the governor hasn't replaced it. But M7B, who is an R5 unit, keeps track of everything for us." So Vader's droid gets the skinny, and he tells Vader, "According to these records, the governor contracted with the colony to deliver critical supplies, but has delivered only 37% of what was promised over the past 3 years. More importantly, the governor forcibly conscripted 33 colonists who have never returned." And this shocks Sabe, to which Wald steps up and says, "We tried getting word to you, Sabe, but the governor's jamming all outgoing signals from the planet, and we don't have any interstellar ships." And then, of course, the droid asks, "Well, what's this, then?" And it's a very souped-up, over-modified, gargantuan pod racer. I mean, this thing is... Like all good pod racers, it's all engines. And, of course, Wall says, "Oh, that's purely terrestrial. Kitster and I cobbled it together over the past few decades with whatever scraps we could find." "And a healthy dollop of nostalgia from the old homeworld," Kitster adds. "We don't actually drive we don't actually have the driving skills to really crank it like the racers did back in the day. But it's pretty, isn't it?" Wald asks. And Vader looks at both of them. "Your names?" "Kitster. Wald." And then we get this great flashback panel of a young Anakin, a young Kitster, and a young Wald. And then the next panel below it is, you know, them in the present time with Kitster saying, "Can we do anything for you?" And then, of course, Anakin goes into full Vader mode. "As you made clear, you can do nothing." So then again, what happens now is Vader, using the Force, realizes that the land is sort of in flux and suffering. And we come to find out that what's happening is that there's an ongoing drought. And, of course, as they're talking about this, they are attacked by creatures from the woods. Sabe starts firing. Vader's got his lightsaber out. Colonists are scattering. Kitster and Wald, they're fighting. And Sabe says, "Kitster, Wald, get back. You're not doing this alone," Sabe, Kitster says. And what proceeds is basically, one full page of Kitster and Wald trying to fight off these creatures, not having a whole lot of luck. I mean, they're killing some, but, they're also, for example, Kitster gets bitten on the arm. Wald gets knocked over. And it looks like he's about to be a mid-afternoon snack for four of these creatures. And that's when Vader steps up, and it's just, it is nine panels, boom, 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 of lightsaber flashing and scything and swishing and screaming and cutting through creatures, while Vader stands imposed over the panels. And it's quite a spectacle. So, it's props to Raphael for the way this is illustrated. And, of course, the colors are just, this wonderful, wonderful hues of orange and red and sort of almost taupe. And it really stands out nicely. Of course, it's all comes to a satisfying head with the creatures killed, Kitster and Wald saved, although they are injured. And of course, everyone is just a little confused as to why these creatures would attack so brazenly. And it's because they're severely dehydrated. They're drying up, as is the entire planet. So now Sabe looks at Vader and says, "Have you seen enough, Lord Vader? The governor's got to be behind this. It's time to take her out." And then, of course, there's a pause, a pregnant pause. And Wald says, Do you think he'll actually..." As he asks this of Kitster, and Kitster replies, "I don't know, Wald. But I got a feeling it all depends on Sabe now." And Vader looks at Sabe and says, "You're not ready." "I've been ready my whole life." "Or no. You ordered them to stay back, but they ignored you and put themselves in danger." To which Sabe says, Everyone makes their own choices in the end." And to which Vader replies, "If you want them to live, they must obey you." So, now what happens is another shuttle has landed. And of course, Vader's droid says, "They've arrived, Lord Vader." So we know this is not from the governor. "Come along now, Sabe. What? Hurry. They're waiting for you inside." "Officer, I trust you've come prepared," he asks of the stormtroopers as they exit the shuttle. "Of course, droid." And Sabe walks up into the cargo bay, and she is surrounded by an armory of Imperial weaponry, stormtrooper gear, and more. And then we cut to Wald. "You think she's going to be all right? After all she's done for us, I just hate to think we got her in trouble." And Kitster says, "I don't know much, Wald, but I don't think she's going to be the one in trouble." And Sabe walks out, decked out in a black uniform, with the armbands going up her arms, black gloves, an Imperial helmet, armed to the teeth, and she's flanked by two stormtroopers. So she is prepared to lead, and she is prepared to make them obey. And we get a "to be continue." So we'll see where that goes, especially in Darth Vader number 24, which is called Old Friends. So, yeah, solid issue. Really builds upon this far-reaching look at the handmaidens and the effect that their loyalty for Amidala has had and the boundaries to which it goes. It's not what we expected when the series started, but it is certainly something we've grown quite used to and are enjoying very much. So we'll take a short break. Sorry, there's some ads. We got to pay for this somehow. That's how we keep everything cheap as free. And we'll be back with Bounty Hunters number 23. And as Jeff would say, we're back with Bounty Hunters number 23. This is, of course, a Crimson Reign tie-in, as was Darth Vader 23. Although, as we've said before in previous episodes, these tie-ins are not at the scope that they were of War of the Bounty Hunters. So, this one, oh man, I love this one. We have a Giuseppe Camuncoli and Jesus Abertoff cover, and it features, you know, Dengar right in the center in full bright color, you know, firing his gun with the logo of Crimson Dawn sort of pasted over him. And in one corner, we see, it looks like, there's Zuckuss and 4LOM and Bossk. So, and this story is called A Clear and Present Danger. It's written by Ethan Sachs. We have a guest artist, Natasha Bustos, is taking the reins for this issue. Colors are by Arif Prianto. Letters are by VC's Travis Lanham. As I said, the main cover is by Giuseppe Camuncoli and Jesus Abertoff. Variant covers, those are by Takeshi Miyazawa and Rochelle Rosenberg. And then, of course, we have the Lucasfilm 50th Anniversary variant by Chris Sprouse, Carl Story, and Niraj Menon. Production design for the book, that's Nick Russell. Assistant editor is, again, Mikey J. Basso. Associate editor is Danny Kazem. Editor is Mark Panizia. And the same crew for Lucasfilm, Robert Simpson, Michael Siglaine, Troy Alders, Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, and Emily Shkukani, as well as Phil Shostak. And we open up in the past, in the industrial sector, Crescent City, Corellia, then. Ha 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 ha, you slugs have no chance to catch me. And it's Zingar on a speeder bike, or Dengar on a speeder bike, not Zingar, sorry. And he's racing across, and then, you know, something comes through his comm. I wouldn't count those prize credits just yet, Dengar. I don't believe it. You got a lot of nerve trying to upstage me. Hey, you're encroaching on my lane. That's cheating. You know, as he says, he's in the background. In the foreground, we see somebody pulling up on a swoop bike. No, trying to force me off the road last lap was cheating. This is style. Dengar says, should have taken that last bump as a hint. I guess I'll have to be a little less subtle this time. Boom! And he pulls out a knife and tries to, tries to slash his competitor. Whoa! Is this why the other swoop racers hate you? They just hate me because I'll do whatever it takes to win. Whoosh! And of course, the hand reaches out, grabs Dengar's hand, knocks the knife loose, and he goes, me too. And that's where it's revealed to be Han Solo. And so Han is holding Dengar close as they're approaching what looks to be like a moisture evaporator. You'll kill us both, Han. Let us go, if you insist. And so Han lets him go, but he also gives him a nudge and, you know, pushes Dengar, in which, you know, Dengar cries out, ah, that push jammed my steering column. Oof, thump, boom. And Han swoops to victory. And there's Dengar on his bottom, you know, holding on to his control rod, his control stick. Boy, that Griffin cheater. And, of course, you know, Han gets the cup, and he's there with Kira. A few more wins, and we'll have enough credits for that ship, Kira. Oh, Han, I love your enthusiasm, but you'll need a lot more than a few. And in the background is Dengar. I really hate that guy. You know? So, it's, you know, it's life on Corellia. Meanwhile, Dengar gets some guff from some of the spectators, and he doesn't take it, and he cracks one of them over the head with his speeder handlebar, and it says, I will not tolerate being disrespected. And then, of course, we cut to the present, the wealthy district of Milvane, which, if you will recall, is the city from the Dr. Aphra, the first volume. And again, it's Dengar saying, I won't tolerate being disrespected. And of course, we see that he is face down on a ledge with somebody, you know, stepping on it on his chest plate. And he's like, hey, oof, watch it. I'm here at your boss's request. Lord Camdeck is going to want to hear what I say, and he can't do that if I'm dead. Well, you're lucky I haven't thrown you off this platform already. Some of those mourners wailing forces you killed were my friends. And, of course, that occurred last issue. So, and then, of course, another of the lackeys says, the bounty hunter Sleemo is clean. No weapons. Sleemo. So he's in disguise, Dengar is. Then Lord Camdeck will see him now. It's about time. And they meet at the Convor's Perch Restaurant. And it's a lovely, high-class establishment with Convor's and cages, you know, strewn about the room. And, you know, then the cages are made of glass, it looks like. And Dengar says, I was getting hungry. I hope you don't mind. Of course not, sir. However, I can be of service. And Dengar says, I'm going to hold going to hold you to that later, he says to the waiter. So they get him to Lord Kamdek. You know, hurry, hurry, no one makes Lord Kamdek wait. And Dinkar's like, hey, this is a classy place. This was meant to be savored, munch, munch, munch. You know, and he gets pushed in, you know. And, you know, he gets, you know, swatted down for weapons. He's clean. Well, then he's even dumber than he looks. Wipe your face off, Skug, if you're going to be seen at my table. You're going to regret slapping me. And it turns out that's Lord Kamdek, who, you know, who's pushed him around. I already regret wasting my time with a bottom feeder like yourself, but killing my men got my attention. Where is my granddaughter? And, of course, he's referring to Cadelia. And of course, Dengar sitting at Kamdek's table. It's laden with just a bounty of food, and Dengar's, he knows he's got the upper hand at the moment. No, that's not how this is going to go. I don't get to eat at fancy restaurants like this very often, and you're going to sit and indulge me for sweet little Cadelia's sake. Mmm, picks up a bottle. Mmm, smells like a good vintage, better than the usual swill. Waiter, bring us the best food you got. And then we cut to the Edgehawk, somewhere in the mid-rim. And of course, Vukora has been taken prisoner by Losha and Tonga. And Tonga's trying to interrogate her. Not to any great effect, though. Tell me where Crimson Dawn is keeping Cadelia, or you'll hit me again. I get it. Maybe I'll skip to the part where I start cutting off fingers. Oh, now this is getting interesting. But here's the thing, you won't actually do it. The Trandoshan, maybe, but not you. And Tonga leans into Vukora, nose to nose. You don't know me or what I'm capable of. Aw, that's so precious. You think you can be intimidating, but you don't have that killer instinct in you. I can feel it every time you pull back on a punch. And Tonga turns away, looks away. I've killed before. Well, maybe when you've had to. I do it when I want to, Vukora says. When I get out of here, I'll show you. Real slowly. So, and then she looks at, Losha. Maybe I'll kill her first because she means something to you. I can tell by how you look at each other. Love makes you vulnerable. The only thing I love is the Unbroken Clan. So if you think I'm going to let some little brat and her bounty hunter champions take it away from me, there's no way you can make me talk. And Tonga reaches for her blade. Well, that sounds like a challenge. And then we cut back to Dengar, who is just going to town, eating everything in sight. You know, you sure you don't want to try something else? Everything is so delicious and expensive. It's a good thing for me you're paying the tab. And, you know, the Lord is... No, I don't want anything. I think I lost my appetite watching you eat. Just get to the point. You should try these spiny Thelpian lizard spikes. The inside meat is delicious. As long as you avoid the venomous pointy parts. Good thing I'm a connoisseur. I think I'll take that special I've heard so much about now. As you wish. The point, Dank Ferrick. And then, of course, Dengar says, well, slurp. The point is that Crimson Dawn has your granddaughter. Don't worry, slurp. She's safe for now. At least while my bosses decide what to do with her. As the sole heir to two syndicates, your granddaughter just became more important, especially after the head of the Unbroken Clan met an unfortunate accident that left Vukora in charge. And if something similarly unfortunate were to happen to you, well, she'd no longer be just an heir, would she? And of course, you know, Gatim glares at him and just, ha ha ha, are you threatening me? You're nothing but a joke. It's not exactly like I'm staring across the table at Boba Fett or Bossk. It's just a gambling addict living off cheap bounties. Laugh it up, Kamdek. I've been disrespected my whole life, but being underestimated has its values. Kamdek gets up, pushes his chair in. Consider this your last meal. Tell me where Cadelia is, and your death will be at least quick. And of course, as he says this in the next panel, Dengar sitting there, looking very sure of himself, as one of Kedem's thugs starts to approach, pistol visible. As I was saying, being underestimated can be useful. Like being able to get this close to the head of a major syndicate. See, I'm just a humble servant of Crimson Dawn. But the Dawn has servants everywhere. In the other syndicates. In the political centers. in the Empire. And then the waiter approaches, "Your special, sir? Even among the staff and the fanciest restaurants in the galaxy." And then we get a close-in set of Kadem's eyes, who's, they're starting to widen. And we see the waiter pull the cover off the plate, and we see the grip of a laser pistol. and then we turn the page. And then a series of 1, 2, 3, 4 quick bursting panels. Dengar takes the lizard spike and stabs it into the thug behind him. "I did warn you that these spikes are poisonous." And as he says that, he reaches for the pistol. "So, Lord Kamdek, who's laughing now?" Pew! And it looks like Kamdek gets shot straight between the eyes and the forehead. And then, of course, the other clientele are, "Ah, no, this shouldn't be happening here, not at these prices." And we get a great two-page spread that Natasha Bustos has drawn here. Just, you know, with Dengar going to town, you know, just taking everybody out, you know. "Not so tough now, are you?" You know. And of course the waiter is, "Oh my, this is scarier than I thought it would be. Welcome to the underworld. It can be a dangerous way of life if you're not careful. Wait, wait." And then of course Dengar grabs the waiter and uses him as a human shield. You know, "If it's any consolation, I really appreciate you bringing me those blasters." God, of course, you know. Kadam's retinue fires and kills the waiter. "Crimson Dawn thanks you for your service." And, of course, he hurls the poor Rodian waiter, a couple others, and is able to make his escape. And he jumps off the table and says aloud, "Dengar, you still got it. I thought this was going to be a lot harder." And then, of course, he looks at the exit, where more of the of Kadam's hirelings are coming in. "Over there..." I had to go and open my mouth. "Pew, pew, 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 pew. All right, this is your last chance to surrender. Hichuta! Hey, watch your language. This is a classy establishment." Can't leave that convor in a cage. So, Dengar shoots the string that is holding the cage to the ceiling, and it falls on the thug, cracks him on the noggin. Oh, there, that's much better. You know, and as he's leaving, he grabs another bottle of spirits. Oh, that's an excellent vintage. Shoots out the glass, and just jumps into his waiting speeder. So, where his ride goes, "You're late." But she asks, "Please tell me you at least brought a bottle of decent spice wine." "Of course. Only the finest thing for us from now on, Monaru. We've got a lot to celebrate tonight, because the hard part comes tomorrow." So, and then we cut to, it's Tonga and Losha. And Tonga's just, "I can't believe he's gone." Because, you know, with Kadam's death, that upends everything that she's been doing. And Losha explains, you know, the Mourner's Wail contact said they suspect Crimson Dawn was behind the hit. If they are assassinating their enemies out in the open, it means the stakes just got higher. Of course, Tonga, you know, she's looking at the bottom line. "With Kamdek dead, we lost a supply of credits to pay for the crew. How am I going to keep this team together long enough to find the girl?" "Well, if you sit there feeling sorry for yourself any longer, the girl may die of old age waiting to be rescued." "You always know just what to say. Tough love, sweetie. Tough love." "Well, I guess there's one move I have left to make. I'll reach out to Sifak, the bounty broker." "Honored that you've reached out to me, Tonga. One of my hunters survived a visit to Crimson Dawn's fortress ship, the Vermilion. He'll get you in and out for the right price." "Thank you, Sifak. You're a good friend." And then we cut to an inset panel after he disconnects from Tonga. Head in hands. "What have I done?" And then we cut back to Milvane, you know, where the Edgehawk is landing. Whoosh. And then, of course, there's Tonga, and she's talking to Bossk. "You trust him?" "I did see him with Valance on that ice planet charging toward the Vermilion before I passed out. So that part checks out. But no, I don't trust him." And then Bossk looks at Dengar. "Well, look what the Reek dragged in." And of course, Dengar jauntily steps up the gangway to get on board the Edgehawk. "Careful, Bossk. It's never a good idea to underestimate me," he says with a smile. And that's our to be continued. So we'll see what happens in a couple of weeks in Bounty Hunters number 24, Secret Weapons. It was a good issue. It was solid. I won't lie. You know, having gotten so used to Paolo Villanelli's artwork, It was a bit jarring at first, but that is in no way meant to denigrate the work that Natasha did. You know, I personally have been a big fan of her work for a while, loved her stuff on Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur in particular. And so, you know, so this was, it was nice to see this done in a different artistic format. You know, it didn't really take away from anything. You know, just, you know, I know we've just gotten so used to Paolo and his work on this book. But, I mean, good Lord, you know, the man could use a short break every now and then. So he's not off the book, by the way. You know, he will be back. So, you know, we already know that from the solicits. So solid two issues. Like I said, you know, a lot of people are going to be very happy with these. You know, especially, you know, fans of the old expanded universe. And of course, you know, fans of the prequel trilogy. And it's just, and it's nice to see Kitster and Wald as adults. You know, I mean, it's I don't want to say that's closure, but you know, it carries it forward. You know, it's another thread that's no longer loose and disparate. So that's what we got. You know, next week, well, let's see. Well, if we're doing it right, June 8th, we get Star Wars number 24, and then we get the Kersantan Star Wars Tales number 1, which is, you know, a collection of these previously published stories featuring Kersantan. So, should be a good week. Should be a good week. Anyway, that's it. So, for Star Wars Splash Page, I'm not Jeff, but I am Matt. And may the Force be with you. Always.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!